everyone. Welcome back to Presenting Pixie Dust. I'm Elizabeth Carr.
And I'm Brett Harvey.
And today we are talking about a Brett pick.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not thrilled about it, if we're really honest.
Come on.
Do you want to do an intro there? You can introduce it.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Presenting Pixie Dust. I'm your host for today with Elizabeth Carr. And we are doing the movie National Treasure.
Dun, dun, dun. I'm not thrilled.
Come on. It's got Nicolas Cage.
That's like the biggest thumbs down I could possibly give it.
I'd like to apologize to our audience for
my bad attitude.
For
going
a bad attitude.
Yeah. Before we even start. Oh, gosh.
So why did I pick this movie? That's probably a good place to start.
All right. You start with that.
Yeah. So I chose this movie because it's not new. It's, I don't know. I can't remember. You'll tell us in the fun facts.
I will tell you in the fun facts.
But it's, over a decade old. It's probably closer to two decades old, I think. But I think it's just a terrific movie. It's got lots of action in it. You know, there's something noble about the characters and their pursuit for their national treasure. I think if you're an American, you'd probably really love this movie because it's got some amazing Americanisms in it. You know, it's the historical stuff. We'll get to that later. But I think it's just an enjoyable ride, and it doesn't rely on lots of, other movies work on a lot of shock value, like gore and fighting and that sort of stuff, and this doesn't need that.
You know, we're a Disney podcast here. Literally nothing we've watched works on gore.
I mean, compared to other movies, like generally other action movies of the same genre, but by different companies, you know, it's much more about the violence and the fighting and that sort of stuff. And this is more about the problem solving and the intrigue. Well, that's what I think anyway.
Look, we'll get to what I... Let's just start with some facts,
yeah,
okay?
Some
undisputable
facts.
Yeah. Because clearly we have very differing opinions on this movie. All right, so this movie premiered on November 19th, 2004. So you were right, it's nearly 20 years old now. It goes for 131 minutes, so it's a very long ride.
Oh, yeah.
If you're on this ride, it's a long one.
It's epic.
It's rated 6.9 on IMDb and 46% on Rotten Tomatoes.
What's going on here, people?
Oh, look, I'm definitely leaning towards Rotten Tomatoes more than IMDb.
It got a 6.0, is it? 6.9. Oh,
IMDb.
Okay. That's nearly a 7. That's all right.
Yeah, that's
really
nearly
good.
A 7.
Yeah, yeah.
And 46%.
Might be my brow here. Yeah.
All right. Are you ready for some facts?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So Ben Franklin and other founding fathers were actually Freemasons.
Yeah.
Of the 55 men who signed the document, 9 or more belonged to the society. So this movie follows a lot of Freemason legend and, legend and sort of conspiracy theories,
conspiracy,
I suppose.
Yeah, there's definitely some conspiracy stuff in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And while we're talking about that, did you know my great-grandfather was a Mason?
Shut up!
No, so kid you not.
Are you a Mason by default? Am I just learning this?
Yeah, maybe I am. we've still got his robes and things like that.
Shut up! Yeah. That's amazing.
So I think the Masons in Australia was a similar kind of thing in, that they were... There was a bit of secrecy about as a society.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, they were ordinary people most of the time in Australia anyway, and they were doing things mostly to help the community
and each other.
I don't know, it's sort of like a brotherhood. I don't know how different it was to the American ones, but I do know that it exists in Australia, and the Masons, you can see Masonic halls or lodges around different country towns and cities, and so I guess it's sort of similar in many ways.
Have you been sitting on this fact for this whole time just to tell me while we've got microphones in front of us?
Yeah.
What you just told me is more interesting than this entire movie.
Well, it's got to come out in the right conversation, doesn't it? You can't just go, hey, honey, did you know?
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. I know that in America, you said, it was a big secrecy surrounding it. Hence, there's a lot of... conspiracy theories about how these secret societies impacted America, American politics, American economics, mm-hmm. American, you know, military stuff, the whole lot. Like, it's believed that they've got sort of their thumbs on everything, pulling some strings. There's some mixed metaphors for you, but yeah.
I had a friend at uni who used to go on these long rants about the Freemasons, and it was just hilarious. And I don't know very much about the society. Are women allowed in the Freemasons? Is it just a man thing?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Even now, still, it's just a man-only thing?
I think
okay.
so.
Well, yeah, he used to go on these big, long rants about the Freemasons and how they're taking over and they're in control of everything, and it was just really funny.
I think this is a terrific episode of The Simpsons about the stonecutters.
Oh, yeah, the stonecutters.
Yeah, and that's basically...
that's all I know about the Freemasons is the stonecutters.
Yeah, they've got special privileges and things like that, you know.
All right, fun fact number two. National Treasure and its 2007 sequel have apparently contributed to an uptick in attendance at the National Archives in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
So I suppose that's a real positive to come out of it if you can. I suppose it would have been the same with Night at the Museum and the Natural History Museum in New York.
Yeah.
Was it would have led to more people going and seeing these
better
places.
Better patronages.
That they might not have seen otherwise.
Yeah.
Fun fact number three. For the scene that required Cage's Ben Gates to run across the roof of Independence Hall in Philadelphia, production travelled not to Pennsylvania, but to Knott's Berry Farm in Buena Park, California, where Walter Knott had a perfect replica of the historical landmark that he'd built back in the 1960s.
Really?
Yeah. So he just ran across that roof.
Wow.
Fun fact number four. Despite him starring as the villain, National Treasure marks one of the few projects in journeyman actor Sean Bean's career wherein he doesn't die. He's been killed in film and TV an astounding 23 times, most notably losing his head as Ned Stark in the first season of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, of course.
He dies in Lord of the Rings as well.
That's what happened when we were watching it. You were like, oh, that's Ned Stark.
Yeah. And at the end, like, oh,
with a really
he's
bad blonde hair.
Oh, it's the worst, like, frosted blonde tips. It's the worst.
It's like something out of the 90s. Come on, mate. We're 2004 now. Like,
yeah.
But I guess they wanted to make him look like a bit of a villain and they wanted... Maybe that's just what villains
look
like.
Well, you know what? Maybe it's because Nick Cage is so dark. Like, his hair is so dark, they wanted something contrasting,
yeah.
Maybe. Because ordinarily the villain would be the, you know, long, dark hair, kind of spooky looking, but...
Got a bit of a Malfoy look about him, you know.
Malfoy?
That's the one.
Not Malfroy.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah, something like that. You
no, because Malfoy's hair was much better.
Yeah,
but
I mean, like, in terms of contrast between him and the main character, mm-hmm. obviously being Harry Potter, for those
Are you
Potter
comparing
fans.
Nicolas Cage to Harry Potter?
Yes, I
will
am.
Not stand. I will not stand
He is
for
magic.
He's something. All right, fun fact number five. The good guys in the movie use Google and the bad guys use Yahoo search engines.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's a thing because just on that, I saw a TikTok recently and this guy was explaining how in movies, Apple has it stipulated, this is not about Google or anything, but it just reminded me of it because Apple has it stipulated that only good characters are allowed to use Apple products in movies.
Yeah.
If you see a character using an Android phone, you know there's going to be a twist later where that person is going to actually be a bad character.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
So it's like
if you
using
see
a BlackBerry or something.
Yeah, so if you see a bad character, the villain of the movie, using an Apple phone, you know that it's going to turn around later and they're going to come good.
There you go.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of what Nicolas Cage... I think Nicolas Cage used a flip phone in the movie.
Well, it was 2004, so probably.
Yeah. So, but it looked like maybe a Nokia or something like that, but maybe, you know, maybe Nokia were the good guys. Who knows?
Well,
I guess it's...
Apparently Google are the good guys and Yahoo are the bad guys.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
It's just like, it's so subtle. It's like product placement, but maybe less obvious. Because obviously they've got to use a search engine. Like, I'm thinking, like, you know, a Coke can placed in a scene is pretty obvious because they could be drinking anything. Whereas a search engine, you wouldn't even think about the implications of that. But, that's really cool.
Yeah, I thought you would.
Yeah.
Fun fact number six. Before the movie got its rating, it was under Touchstone Pictures banner, which is a part of Disney, which is one of their, you know, sister brands. When the film got its rating, which is PG for those of you playing at home, it was then put under the Walt Disney Pictures banner, as it's clear that it's a more family-friendly movie.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Because I was confused when you said that we would do this one. I thought, oh, I didn't know that that was a Disney movie.
Well, I think the other thing too is, yeah, Disney have put out a new channel now. What was it called? Disney Star.
And on Disney Plus.
And so Star is aimed at more adult-related content. Mm-hmm. So maybe, you know, the thought is, you know, do they really make adult movies per se? This one is like...
Not under the Walt Disney banner, they don't.
No, but this one is very clearly family-friendly. Yep. Not a single swear word was spoken.
Not a single bit of blood. Despite people being shot.
The only bit of blood was when he cuts his own thumb with a knife.
Self-inflicted blood.
So that he can solve a riddle, a puzzle, which was pretty cool, mind you. We'll get to that later.
Well, was it cool?
But no blood. There's a bit of shooting at one stage.
Yeah, there's a lot of guns.
No one got hit by a bullet.
Just like unbelievably, no one got hit by a bullet. You know what? We'll get to that. We'll get to that. Fun fact number 7. The movie suggests that something is written on the back of the Declaration of Independence. It is true, something is written on the back. The writing on the back of the Declaration of Independence reads, "Original Declaration of Independence, dated 4th of July, 1776. And it's like upside down in the bottom corner.
And that's what that comes up in the movie. I think they say that I think Cage's dad says that it's the original document. Or maybe it's the girl, I don't know.
Yeah.
One of them says it, that's what says it on the back. And he's like, there's a secret code.
While no one knows for certain who wrote this on the declaration, it is known that early in its life, the large parchment document was rolled up for storage. So it's likely that the notation was added simply as a label. So that as they're looking through all the scrolls, they go, oh, that's what that one is.
It's kind of funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you think about it, because it's such a hugely important document to the American history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe even the world history.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fun fact number 8. Ben, Patrick, and John Gates were all named after founding fathers, Benjamin Franklin, Patrick Henry, and John Adams. Abigail Chase is a combination of Abigail Adams, wife of John Adams, and Samuel Chase, a signer of the Declaration of Independence, and later an Associate Justice of the United States Supreme Court.
There you go.
Yeah.
So they're just weaving their magic in there.
Absolutely.
Bit of history. Splashy splash.
Yeah, splashy splash.
I love it. Yeah, I think this movie, you can sort of tell there's a lot of research that's gone into it.
Mm-hmm.
And reminds me a bit of the Da Vinci Code.
Oh, it reminds me a lot of the Da Vinci Code.
In so much as... So much of it is based on real life facts and then, but they're weaving in this element of fiction where you're not quite sure what is actually the factual stuff and what is now the fictional part of it.
Well, it's like an American Da Vinci Code.
It is.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
It was almost exactly the same story.
It was before almost the Da Vinci Code.
Was it?
I think, yeah.
No, because the book, The Da Vinci Code, came out before the movie did. So the book, The Da Vinci Code, came out in 2003, and the movie came out in 2006.
So they're all right about the same time.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, maybe this, the general success of National Treasure might have spurred on The Da Vinci Code as being of a similar topic. And The Da Vinci Code as a movie was highly successful.
It was brilliant.
And it'll be interesting to see what the comparative IMDb ratings and stuff are for that movie. But the book itself was so good.
Oh,
so good.
Incredible. Yeah. I suppose the Da Vinci Code movie was based off of literature that existed at being the book, whereas National Treasure just sort of came out of nowhere. It wasn't based on anything.
It was an original,
I put original in air quotes, an original idea.
Yeah.
That they had. Well, you know what? Maybe they did just both come up with something very similar. Though, having said that, I'm sorry, the wheels in my head are turning as I'm talking. So the Da Vinci Code would have been researched and everything for years before the book came out.
Yeah,
how long
for
did
sure.
it take to slap together a movie script?
Oh, well, a screenplay. Well, it depends on how much money you got to put into it. You know, the turnaround could be quite quick. If you invest the money.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, full-time writers and so forth.
But it follows a similar sort of formula of having to solve clues and then go to the next place and find the next clue and try and find the treasure that is hidden, that the Freemasons have hidden somewhere.
Yeah.
And at the time when this movie starts, we find out that there's treasure somewhere because Nicolas Cage's grandfather tells him there is. And we don't know where, but we have a clue that says the secret lies with Charlotte. That's the only thing that we know at the start. And then as the movie unfolds, it gives us more information, which eventually leads to Nicolas Cage somehow grasping at straws and figuring out that they need the declaration. There's something on the back of the Declaration of Independence, and that's where they're going.
Yeah. So I reckon it's a pretty clever move to start the movie with Cage as a child.
Mm-hmm.
I think that helps to maybe attract a younger audience into draw it into that storyline that this is him, you know, this is something that's started when he was a kid. And, you know, he's grown up, it's in his family, but we find out that, you know, his dad's not too keen on this whole mystery, this whole story of the Freemasons.
Well, it's because his grandfather, so Nicolas Cage's grandfather, whose character's name is Ben. All right,
let's call him Ben.
Instead of Nicolas Cage. Yeah. Ben's grandfather has spent his whole life in pursuit of trying to find where this treasure is. They're treasure hunters. And his dad has...
He invested several decades and he got nowhere.
So he just doesn't want Ben to go down the same path of losing his entire life looking for something that he truly believes that John Voight, who plays his father...
Yeah, does a good job, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Genuinely believes doesn't exist.
I think John Voight mentions that he lost his wife out of it as well.
Yeah.
In there, which, you know, he doesn't want Nick to sort of destroy his life. Ben. This is going to take a while. I got to write this down. Yeah, he doesn't want his son to waste his life. But, you know, Ben, he's very good at what he does.
Mm.
I think, you know, the tricky thing about this movie and the same thing with Da Vinci Code that I noticed is when you read the novel of the Da Vinci Code, there's a lot of explanation.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of thought thinking out loud on the page in writing where he sort of justifies his thinking. You know, making connections with things he knows, his knowledge and of the subject, blah, 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 and how he works out the clue. But it's really hard to put all of that thinking into a visual format, like into a movie.
Yeah.
How do you show that a person's actually thinking and solving a problem in their head in a visual way? And I think this movie is very clever in that respect, that there's a lot of puzzles that are physical.
Yeah.
Parts to it. There's physical elements
like
to it.
Like the pipe that they find.
You know, there is obviously the Declaration itself. There's also, they find a set of glasses to read the Declaration, and there's physical elements to that.
They're like 3D glasses. So they've got the blue and the red.
Yeah. But, you know, there are moments in the movie where he is like literally standing there thinking, how do you make that engaging for people to watch? And so that's where the other characters come in, and there's this sort of banter back and forth about, you know, knowing the answers or what's the answer going to be. And there's this tension that builds, and it's really quite clever.
Well, it has its moments. I think that my biggest issue with this movie is that the whole thing just seems so unbelievably implausible.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many things where I went, hang on a minute. Like, and you know, I am a Disney fan. I am a fan of movies and TV, and I can suspend my disbelief a lot.
Yep.
Like, a lot. But there was just moments. I think when you base something so much in fact,
yep,
or what is meant to be fact, and you're creating something that you want your audience to believe is factual, it's just really difficult for me to go, hang on a minute. First of all, like the big chase scene after he steals the Declaration. So after we're going to jump around a bit here and explain some different parts of the movie, but after he actually does steal the Declaration of Independence, he gets there before
the bad guys.
Sean Bean,
yep,
whose name is Ian, yep, Ian in the movie. So he gets there before Ian. They go on this big like car chase through Washington.
Yep.
The state, like the capital of the country, arguably where there will be security everywhere. And they are shooting at each other and hanging out the doors of these vans.
Yeah.
And no one stops. There's not a police car to be seen. Nowhere. And it's just like, I just went, really? Where is, who's, like, I just, I, oh, I don't get it.
The focus, too, is so much on what they're doing. Like, you don't actually get the bystander aspect of it. Like, there'd be people running and screaming and hiding and, you know, if there's people driving along shooting out of a vehicle.
In Washington, but there's in Washington, D.C. You don't really get
that. It's all focused on those immediate characters.
On Washington, D.C., on the night of a gala, where which all your important people are in one spot. Which would presumably be a Saturday night,
you know. Yep. A gala like that would be on a Saturday night.
Where all your important people are just in one spot.
Yep.
And it just all seemed really ridiculous. Like, it was very, like, Ocean's 11 and Mission Impossible and Indiana Jones all rolled into one where I just went, oh, okay. We're just, we're pretending this all seems legit. Okay. All right, that's fair.
Yeah, look, there was certainly, we did say that as we went along, that there was, it harked back to some classic movies, Indiana Jones, the chase scene with Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade, when they've got the tanks and the cars and things like that, motorcycles.
Mm-hmm.
There's also...
That's my favourite Indiana Jones movie, FYI, Last Crusade.
Yeah.
Because it starts with River Phoenix and he's my favourite actor.
He's brilliant. Yeah, it was just like so many other movies.
Mm-hmm.
Fast and the Furious.
Yep.
With the car scenes. Mm-hmm. All of that stuff. Yeah, so, like, it was a very long movie.
It was really long.
I think there were large chunks of it, you know, like, you sort of got that first, I reckon probably about a quarter of it was that lead up to the direct declaration.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've got the, it starts off in the Arctic Circle and they're searching for the Charlotte. And then that's when Ian and Ben part ways because Ben says, you know, something like there's no more to the riddle or something like that.
He wants to give up.
Ian doesn't want to give up. Ian decides to stab him in the back, tries to blow him up. I think they try to blow each other up or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then so from that moment, we sort of get that picture of Ben having this noble approach to the quest and Ian being the guy who just wants the money. He just wants the money out of it, not the actual solving of the mystery.
I disagree. Can I tell you why?
Okay.
I don't think that Ben's outlook is noble here. I think the issue that he's got, it's an ego thing and now it's a race and he wants to win. He wants to win. He wants to be the one that does it, that finds it, and
of course he's put in all the effort. He's put in all the research. But
he
gave up.
He said, "Oh well, I don't want to do it." And it was only because Ian said, "Well, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go and find it." That he went, "Oh, hang on a minute. I better go and be noble and fulfill my life's quest." And,
yeah, but if you look at the hero's quest storyline, there's always this moment of, you know, where the character questions his own beliefs and his own, you know, intentions and has this, you know, I guess, lack, you know, a sort of a point where there's a lack of faith
mm-hmm.
and he has to push through this lack of faith to then get to the next stage. And I think that's what that was. You know, he's getting to that point where his dad has been telling him for so long, you're wasting your time. And he gets to the point where he thinks that maybe it is a waste of time. But he did find the pipe. That's the thing he holds on to, literally.
Yeah.
Is this pipe. Because he knows that the pipe was real, mm-hmm. then the rest possibly is real because there's more, there can be or could be more to it.
Yeah.
But I still see that, you know, yeah, you're right. There isn't definitely an ego thing there. Because his family's reputation has been sunk over this.
Mm-hmm.
They think his family's crazy.
Yeah.
So he's trying to restore people's, you know, faith in his family's name. You know, he's trying to restore the family name, the legacy. So I think, although it's ego-driven, there's something noble in that. It's not merely about him. It's about his family.
Yeah.
And with the treasure, he doesn't want to find the treasure so that he becomes rich per se. He wants to find it because it is a national treasure. The nation deserves to have it. You know, the nation deserves to discover this. It shouldn't be hidden away.
So you think the treasure is what they're referring to as national treasure and not the Declaration of Independence?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I thought when I like watched it, I thought the Declaration of Independence is the national treasure.
Well, it is. It's one part of the treasure, of course.
Mm.
But, you know, this treasure that they're looking for, this, it's reputed to be, you know, I guess the biggest collection of artifacts from around the world of all history, You know, there is stuff from the ancient Egyptians. Then shouldn't it be
called International Treasure? Because none of the treasure is actually American treasure.
Honey, it's an American movie. So we know that the Americans, you know, haven't you seen the movie Independence Day where the Americans say always seem to be the ones saving the day?
Yeah, anyway. Or the World Series where it's only America that plays. Yeah, that's
right. So we know, yeah, we know there's some,
Like it should be called International Treasure if that's where we go. That's why I thought it was the Declaration of Independence they were talking about as a national treasure. Yeah. Because that is their national treasure. That is a really important thing.
The one that stuck out to me was actually the Lady Abigail. She, when they actually get in there to the... Spoiler alert! They do discover the national treasure in the end. And she says, oh, there's scrolls here from the Library of Alexandria.
Yeah.
Which is probably, would be probably the most valuable thing in the world because the Library of Alexandria was an ancient library where they took documents from all over the world and copied them by hand. So that it was basically like the biggest library collection of the world, you know, prior to Christ, prior to, you know, a lot of that, you know, the ancient Egyptians and stuff like that. It got burnt down though.
Mm-hmm.
Burnt down. So they lost all of this written history of the world. And anyway, so I just thought that was an interesting point. That,
it's funny that she just like looked at it. These are ancient scrolls from the Library of Alexandria that I have looked at for 4 seconds and can immediately identify as this coming from that one spot.
So there's some things about it which are just a bit insane, right? Like, but more I just like, than just that. You know, I just like that it's that this treasure is a world's treasure. You know, that it's not about, for him, it's not about money, but. Money does become a focus at the end when they're talking about, you know, them getting a finder's fee and getting 1% of the value of this. And it's worth billions upon billions of dollars. So 1% of billions upon billions is still a lot of money.
Yep.
But they quibble over this fact with his sidekick.
Riley. Riley was my favourite part.
Well, he's a comic relief. He's fantastic. But, you know, he says, you know, you only took 1%. We could have taken more. And he's there driving in his flash Ferrari. You know, he's got plenty of money. He doesn't need the money. But it's interesting that it does turn to that topic at the end.
Well, of course it would.
You know, to finish things off. He gets the girl in the end. Ben does.
Abigail.
He woos her. So all throughout this story, he manages to not only find this amazing treasure, but he also woos this lovely lady. Maybe she's the national treasure.
Maybe she is, but she's also German or something, didn't she say? So she's also an international treasure.
So it's just quite funny. So you have all of these elements, you know, like a good Indiana Jones movie. There was always a love interest.
Yeah, of course.
Think about, since we're talking about, you know, Harrison Ford, you know, Han Solo, there was always a love interest there.
Yeah, but that's not Indiana Jones
movie. Doesn't matter. Like, you know, Star Wars, there's always that love interest there, even despite the situation. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be a war-torn country or something, and there's still this element of love in there, finding love. I find that always quite interesting. Did it need to have that part of the storyline? Probably not. It might have saved half an hour.
It was good, though, I think, to have that. Although she didn't really add very much to the story.
I think she made some comments which helped to solve some clues at some point, but she was basically along for the ride for the most part.
Because she wouldn't let him leave. Yeah. She just sort of got sucked into it at the start before that big chase because she wouldn't let him leave with the declaration.
So basically, going back to the timeline, we had that first quarter was all that lead up to we've got to steal the Declaration of Independence. Then you had about a half an hour, which was the stealing of the Declaration of Independence.
I actually enjoyed that part. That part was good. I had a lot of wonderings as I watched that, which was I wonder if like all the security around, you know, because they talk about how the declaration isn't lit, like when they have to restore it or do any work on it, they don't pick it up and move it. It goes like down into the vault and they work on it there and it's all like all this security. Yep. And I was wondering if all of that is legit, if there's that level of
What's the accuracy with the representation of the security? Yeah, if there's security.
A real vault under there and that's how they...
In so much as like with Ocean's 11 and
that's what it reminded me of.
That whole part was that Ocean's 11 of the, you know, we've got to, you know, Mission Impossible, sneak in. And also the time, it was time sensitive because they knew the bad guys were going to get there first.
Because Ian was right there. It was
and they were worried that if Ian got it, he wouldn't just find it, but it would get destroyed in the process of him trying to, you know, use it.
That was my favourite part of the whole movie was the stealing of the Declaration. Though they were shooting at him.
Yeah.
And he's holding up the Declaration of Independence, which is still in its frame, to, like, be saved. And I just don't believe. You're like, yeah, but the glass is bulletproof. Like, I don't believe that that bullet is going to just bounce off that glass and protect him. If the glass is that thick that it's bulletproof, if it is glass and it's bulletproof, that would have been heavy as trying to carry that huge frame.
He's a pretty strong guy.
Oh, he's not that strong. It's a really big frame and a really big heavy piece of glass.
This is Nick Cage. He can do anything, honey.
I don't know. Though I did like the part, little comic relief, as he's actually got it out and he's leaving with it. And the chick in the gift shop, because you've got to exit via the gift shop, is like, you've got to pay for that. And there's a whole bunch of, you know, replicas of the Declaration. So he pays for it. So I enjoyed that part. I was like, oh yeah, that was funny. That was cute.
Yeah, there was a lot of humor throughout, I think, which was fantastic. So we're up to about halfway through the movie by the time they get the Declaration.
Yeah.
I think we then spend the next half an hour, basically there is they go back to his dad's place. It's the only safe place, at least for the time being. They know that they'll get to him eventually. So they go back. They're trying to uncover this riddle from the Declaration. And then from there, it goes into this kind of cat and mouse chasey stuff.
Where they're always just one step behind him.
The police are following them. They're one step behind. And, you know, the bad guys end up with the girl, I think, and they have the Declaration, and there's this whole thing about, you know, let's swap them over, blah, 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 or, you know, and that seems to go on for quite a bit, that whole part. And then the last half an hour is more or less when the bad guys and the good guys come together.
Because they've got his dad.
Yeah. And then Sean they actually, they get down to the final couple of puzzles, which get them to the treasure. So you can see why with such big parts of this story being sort of expanded to be about half an hour each, how 2 hours can fill up very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it looked, to me, I enjoyed it for the whole time, but I could see where it was quite a long movie.
Yeah.
You know, you start to check the Facebook a bit and...
Not the Facebook. check the Facebook.
I'll hop on Google. Not on Yahoo.
Not on Yahoo.
But yeah, there's you know, it's got a bit of everything. There's explosions, there's a bit of guns, there's a little bit of fist fighting, there's a bit of romance, there is obviously the, you know, there's a treasure, and I don't know, about you, but I love a good treasure story.
Oh, I don't mind a treasure hunt. I liked the clues and everything. I just thought that it was all just so completely ridiculous that they didn't get caught by the police at any point during this whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't the stress. The stress was not the police are going to catch us. The stress is Ian is going to get there first.
Yeah.
That was always the thing. And, like, there were so many times where I went, I don't understand where all the security is right now. Like, when they were solving the clues and they found, like, the time on the $20 bill or whatever it was, and they went, oh, that's the time when something's going to hit something on the Liberty Bell and shoot light or whatever. Yeah. And I'm like, well, first of all, he's like, oh, but it's daylight savings, so that affects. I'm like, well, doesn't it affect what time of, like, day it is and what season it is, where the sun is at certain points? And, like,
yeah, okay, there's things that gloss over like that.
Cool, whatever. And, like, and then he's running. Nicolas Cage is running across the roof of what building did I say it was in the fun facts? Of
Independence Hall.
He's running across the roof of Independence Hall where all of these, like right next to the Liberty Bell, right?
Yep.
Where all of this, all of these important things are happening, and there's school groups there, and there's...
And no one's going,
where is the security?
God, is a guy up there?
Guy Right, first of all, don't terrorists. Tell me you can somehow get up to the Liberty Bell without anyone noticing you. First of all, not just once with Nicolas Cage, but twice because Ian gets up there as well with his little group of people. And then he runs across the roof and is scratching out a brick from the wall, which I went, I'm sorry, bricks don't come out of walls that easily. When I was in high school, when I was in high school, my friends decided that there was one brick in the wall that they wanted to get out, and it took them weeks of getting the grout out, and they got the brick out, side note, but it was not as easy as Nicolas Cage took him 45 seconds of, like, little shum, 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 okay, it's out now.
But and it's Nick Cage, honey, you can do anything.
Come on. So
speaking of bells, by the way, I don't think Liberty Bell is actually hanging in the tower.
No, it wasn't, because they went there first. Yeah.
But anyway, but speaking of bells, going back to the early on in the movie, the Charlotte. So they're looking in the ice frozen tundra of the Arctic Circle. They're using metal detecting equipment and snow machines. Da 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 da. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they come across. They do discover the remains of the ship, but the thing that catches you and goes, "What is the fact that one Nick? There's about eight of them looking with metal detectors. Nick's the one that finds it.
Of course.
Ben is the one that finds it of all people. Secondly, he digs about less than a foot down to find this ship's bell, the Charlotte ship's bell. And the third part about it is that where he digs, he happens to see the bell in the exact orientation for him to be able to read the name, the ship's name on the bell. He puts a little bit of water on it, drizzles a bit of water, and we can clearly read Charlotte. And you're just like, what is the, like, unfathomable unlikelihood that that bell would be orientated in the exact position for him to identify it straight away?
And, like, I know you said he's the one with all the knowledge and he's so smart. It's taken him 30 years to figure out that Charlotte is a boat.
Yeah.
And to find, and he had the clue, the secret lies with Charlotte. And it's taken him 30 years to figure out that Charlotte is a boat. And then a further 5 days to solve all the rest of the clues and find the treasure.
It all happens very quickly.
It all happens really fast, seeing as though he's a full grown adult by the time that he actually finds this ship and figures out. Well, I suppose maybe it's really difficult to get up to the Arctic Circle.
I don't even know. They don't even really explain or how he manages to have gotten to this part of his adulthood financially.
Nah.
Like, does a dude not have a job or something?
He's treasure hunter.
Like, you know, I know in other movies where you do have treasure hunters.
Indiana Jones.
No, I'm thinking like, well, see, Indiana Jones, he had a
job.
He's
an archaeologist.
No, he's a professor. No, he had a job. He's a professor at a university.
He was at a high school, wasn't he? Nah. Or maybe he was at a university. Yeah, you're right.
And even someone like, I'm trying to think of, what was that one with, not Woody Harrelson, the other guy.
I don't know what you're talking about.
He does the whiskey ads now.
Matthew McConaughey.
You know, he's got when they show in his movies, Fool's Gold, I think it's called.
Okay.
Brilliant movie, by the way. Watch it. It's for good fun. But you know, it's similar in many ways, but what they explain is that, you know, he has, throughout the years, he's made lots of discoveries that have resulted in him actually having some money. Like, he's not super uber duper rich, but he's not poor either because of his finds, his discoveries. Mm-hmm. This is part of what he does, but they don't even bother explaining that in this movie.
It's not like, important.
How does Ben get to what he would be in his 40s in this movie?
No, I don't think he's that old. I think he's in his like mid 30s.
No. Yeah. Haven't you seen his hairline?
Right.
Yeah, anyway.
Okay.
Sorry, Nick Cage.
Sorry, Nick.
But seriously, no, I think he's about mid 40s.
Okay.
And how does he get there, but actually, you know, they don't explain that he's had a job. But anyway, it's just interesting. I think there's a lot of interesting, like you mentioned before about, you know, there's a lot of American history in there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of high-profile American buildings mentioned.
With no security. Yes, continue.
And places. So I think that, you know, maybe part of the value of this movie is not merely entertainment value, but it actually highlights some of that American history.
Absolutely.
You know, maybe it gets the next generation of kids interested in what American history is. You know, I think that probably, you know, being a Disney movie, part of the value of Disney movies is they're trying to entertain, but also, you know, if you follow Walt's ideology, there's always some, you know, there's always some element of history that you want to try and preserve, and in the storytelling. And I think there's something in that.
I think that, well, if we want to talk about what we thought, so what rating would you give this? How many stupid 3D glasses would you give this movie?
How many stupid 3D glasses would I give it?
Yeah.
So, what were they called?
I don't know. Stupid 3D glasses.
Yeah, they had a special name for
them. But apparently when you look through them and look at the Declaration of Independence, they become like
super holograms graphic or something.
Holograms and stuff. Come on. Anyway, never mind.
Yeah, so...
Moving on.
Ben Franklin, I think, wasn't he the inventor of them? Something like that. Bifocals, yeah.
I learned that from The Office.
Yeah, so that's what Franklin I mean. Like, there's a whole bunch of names, you know, in American history. It's quite interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so how many... opticals or whatever they're called, special opticals, would I give
stupid
them?
3D glasses.
I'm going to give it a solid 7.5.
Oh, you're back to a halvesies.
Yeah. I'm thinking I'm closer to an 8 for me personally.
Okay.
But you'd probably tear me down if I went to an 8.
You can have your own opinion.
Thank you. How many scrolls from the Library of Alexandria would you give it?
I'm going to give it a generous 6.
6, yeah.
Yeah. A generous 6. I thought it was entertaining. There was just way too many things that I went, hang on a minute. Like, that just seems like I just can't quite get on board. And I was expecting at the end when they actually finally got into the final treasure vault for it to be very Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and the Knights of Templar are going to be in there. There's going to be some sort of ancient Freemason that's going to talk to him and then like melt away into nothingness because they've fulfilled their quest of protecting the treasure.
Yeah.
Whatever. I just... was expecting that, and then it didn't happen. But, yeah, 6. It was really long as well. I think that that's what brought it down for me a bit too, was that it was really, really long.
Mm.
It felt long as I was watching it. There was one point when we paused it, we went, has this still got 50 minutes to go?
Yeah.
Because it was moving very quickly.
It had a real pace to
it. But it was just a lot. The whole way through.
So there's lots and lots of little things.
But I suppose you need to have all the clues in there, otherwise it's... It feels like there's only 2 clues for the whole treasure hunt.
And we haven't mentioned it, but in terms of, like, audio stuff, there was a lot of the music in the background that kind of...
Sense of urgency.
There was a sense of urgency, foreboding,
mm-hmm.
Tension,
yeah.
And pace to keep it going. There were no songs as such. There was no theme song or any kind of lyrical music in the background, but it did keep it going.
I can see why this movie would appeal to families. I can see why this movie would appeal to particularly American audiences. And it was entertaining. But it was long, and there were some parts that I just went, yeah, nah, I can't buy. I don't buy that. You know, I think that when you... Again, no, I've worked out what it is.
Yep.
When I say, you know, I can suspend my disbelief with some things, it's because when a movie and a world is constructed really well, like something like Onward, for example, where, you know, there's all these different sort of, you know, fairy tale creatures living in the mythical creatures living in this place. And you just go, oh, yeah, that's a dragon now. Cool. It's because that everything has sort of been set up for your brain to believe that that can be possible. But my brain cannot believe it's possible that there is no security at these national monuments stopping this, because this is a world that we actually live in.
Yeah, of course.
So my brain can't suspend
disbelief. If you've ever been to
any museum,
a national monument or museum anywhere in the world, there's always a level of security.
Particularly
always,
these big
every
national...
time of day, any time of the year.
But it would be like if I went up to, you know, Parliament House, there's security, particularly these places that have these big artifacts that can't be replaced.
So, like, a really good example is when we were in America, we went to the Twin Towers memorial site, which was on the side of where one of the towers was.
Both of the towers.
But the one that we stood at.
Yeah.
And I was barely even touching the rail, and a security person came over and told me off. Told me not to touch it. But like, there was that level of security. Like,
absolutely.
I could barely even breathe on that, you know, space without someone noticing.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems a bit implausible that they could be you know, sauntering around these spaces without anyone really picking it up and going, oh, that seems suspicious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Climbing on the roof of Independence Hall.
Yeah, how could that go unnoticed?
Yeah, you know, without like... the police, the federal police, the, you know, SWAT teams swarming with their big machine guns.
Yeah.
It's like, I just, yeah, man, I just...
yeah.
You know, that was where it got me in terms of implausibility. But, you know, it was entertaining. So I would go 6 Scrolls of Alexandria.
There was, you know, you'll notice at the end when you watch it that they say... Oh, look, there's... I love this little bit where the police do catch up. Oh, no. So Ben does... He contacts the police, mm-hmm. the guy in the... Sorry, the, you know, feds, and the guy who's in charge there, he speaks with him. He tells him that he's found the treasure. And there's two parts of it that are interesting. One, this police officer, this fed, he's wearing a Freemason's ring, which kind of is a subtle nod that... they are among us.
Yeah.
Which I really love. They are still among us, I mm-hmm. think is probably more the correct analogy. And then the second part was he says to Ben, well, someone's got to go to jail for the, you know, for what's happened.
Absolutely.
And I think, well, that's very true. That's very American. That's very realistic. You know, someone's got to go to jail for this.
They've broken many laws. They stole the Declaration of Independence. If it was just that one thing that they did. Stealing a national thing. And then not only did they steal it, they then rubbed lemon juice all over it and applied heat to it. And you're not going to tell me that's not going to make all the ink on the front disappear. I think the actual Declaration of Independence, I was reading somewhere in my research, it said that you wouldn't even be able to see ink on it anymore.
No.
It would just be... So yeah. I don't know if in the archives the actual Declaration of Independence is on... file, like they would have it,
yeah.
But whether that's on show, because I think that you can't even read anything on it anymore.
Mm, we'd be pretty faded
after, after you know, 300 years or however
depends
long
on the quality
been.
Of the ink, you know,
300 years, and that wouldn't have been
possible.
Preserved very
it's
well
possible.
For the first part. If it had been preserved the whole time, sure, but I don't think it would have been.
It is possible, you know, but it's kind of it makes you wonder though.
Yeah.
I think
anyway,
and I think like This movie's a lot of fun. You'll have fun watching it with your kids.
Why do you assume that everyone that listens to our podcast has got children? We don't have children.
Watch it with someone's kids then. Like, just get some random kids and watch it with them.
We
if
do
you don't
not
have
condone
kids. Watch it with your dog.
That. Watch it with your dog.
Or
don't. Like,
yeah, watch it. It's a good movie. It's fun. You'll enjoy it. It's got some good stuff in there.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, that wraps up National Treasure for us. Maybe the last time I let Brett pick the movie that we're going to watch. Thank you for tuning in and spending your hour with us. We really appreciate you. If you're feeling really generous, please go and subscribe to our show wherever you're listening from, and also rate and review if you can, because it really helps people find the podcast. You can also like us on Facebook and Instagram to keep up with all the podcast news. And you can also listen to Brett's other podcast, Teaching for Dummies, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you want to add anything?
Nah, I hope everyone's well. Keep going.
Yep. All right. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.